Folks, we're back. I'm your host, BKP. Good morning from the office. And like I told you yesterday, today and tomorrow, we will dedicate 1 hour, the 9 o'clock hour, to Georgia 2019 Georgia legislative session. Now joining us, District 51 State Senator Steve Gooch. Senator Gooch, glad to have you on the show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Explain to our viewers, before we get started in some other things, explain to our viewers, you know, what crossover day is, because they'll hear crossover day. What exactly, Thursday night at midnight, what is crossover day in the legislative session?
Okay, well, good. Crossover day is technically the 28th day of the 40-day session, and it's the day that all bills in the House or the Senate must pass their chamber in order to be considered in the other chamber in the same current year. And so there's 200 or 300 bills in each chamber. There's probably more in the House, actually, because there's 180 House members and only 56 senators. So there's hundreds of bills being heard in committees, and you have until, actually yesterday was the last day to have the committee to pass the bill in order to have it committed to the Rules Committee to have it heard on the floor by Thursday night. So after Thursday, if your bill didn't clear the chamber, then it would have to wait until next year.
So a bill right now would have had to have been able to basically already by today made it through the process of the hearings and rules to get to the vote for Thursday, to get on the roll call to vote for Thursday. So there's not a new bill that can be dropped today or tomorrow, or
there are exceptions. And okay. One, a local bill, let's say the city of Blue Ridge wants to change its charter and amend something minor in their charter, then that can be done for another couple of weeks. And so there's still time to do those local legislation issues. And so those go on the consent calendar, and they're not heard in committee like the bills would be on a general calendar bill.
So something that's on consent where the bills you have now are what's called the general calendar that have to run through committees and committee hearings and go over hurdles. But if something happens that those hurdles are not required, they could move forward in your district.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Moving right along, because I know you're busy and you got to get on the floor by 10 in the last couple days here. So I do want to discuss last year, SB 445, and the reason I bring that up, and I want to get into some newer legislation, is our last guest, and a lot of email correspondence with myself here, and our last guest on the show, D.A. King, and I know you know D.A. King. He is concerned that SB 445 has a loophole for the Department of Transportation where E-Verify that is required in the bid before the bid is opened with other state governments like counties and things like that. The Department of Transportation does not have to require that E-Verify until the contract is awarded. I know it's convoluted. Can you clear that up and answer somewhat what questions he's bringing up? I know you're aware of what he's talking about.
Yeah, and DA and I have talked in the past. In fact, we've talked briefly this year about it, and he sent emails, and he's been very active down here for years in passing anti-immigration legislation, and I've co-sponsored and voted for all of those over the years and worked with Josh McCoon and others, and I don't think you'll ever see my voting record tarnish in that regard. I've always been very strong on immigration issues here in Georgia. And so every year we have what's called a housekeeping bill. Every state agency, or typically most state agencies, have housekeeping bills yearly, and they clean up language in their code section. And so the DOT has the similar language every year, almost every year, and I'm the sponsor of those bills primarily because I used to be the chairman of transportation, and I was on the DOT board, and I was a county commissioner, so I'm very familiar with their business and their procurement process. And so that bill, I'm not sure if there was any other language in it. I'm sure there probably was, but it had language in there pertaining to when the immigration information had to be verified. And so they were having trouble. The DOT in the procurement office was having trouble with some of their contractors having all of their information submitted by the deadline of the date they were going to open bids. And so let's just say hypothetically that if 4 o'clock on Friday of this week, they were going to open a bid on a $500 million project, and they wanted to try to solicit as many bids as possible for that project, because bids try to, you know, you try to get competitive bids to lower the price and get good quality bidders, and you want to bring as many in-state bidders in as well. So, you know, you obviously, you've always got the out-of-state bidders and contractors, international contractors that are in here trying to get our work now. So we try to encourage more and more bidders so we get better pricing. And if you found one piece of paper out of place whatsoever in that bid requirement, then those bids were disqualified, which means they were rejected. They weren't even opened. And so we were seeing that technicalities were being missed in the bid documents before they were even opened. And one of those was that issue. If the e-verified document was not notarized, for example, and didn't have the proper date on it or the signature, then that would disqualify from that bid even being opened and read into the minutes of the meeting. And so the change that was made was simply, instead of requiring that e-verified document to be submitted before the bid was read, it was changed to where the e-verified documentation had to be submitted and verified before the bid was awarded. And there's a big difference between awarded and the contract being signed. So once the bids are opened, they read all the bids. Let's say there's 15 bidders that bid on this project, and 15 bids were read, all 15 numbers were written down. And then after that, they look at the lowest bidder, and they say, you look like you are the apparent low bidder. Let's say it's the Brian Pritchard Paving Company. You are the lowest bidder based on the number that you submitted. Now, the next step is to go through that bid document to make sure all of the paperwork's in place. One, did he have the performance bonds in place? Did he have the bid bonds in place? Does he have his workers' compensation certificates? Does he have the general liability certificates? Does he have a list of subcontractors that are going to be working on the job? And then you go to that level and then you say, okay, how about E-Verify? Does Brian Pritchard Paving Companies have his E-Verify papers on file? Are they current? Does all of his subcontractors have their E-Verify papers in the file? Are they current? And then before any contract is executed, which could be weeks or months later, all of that's verified through the procurement office, and they come back to it, to the DOT commissioner's office, and say, all the paperwork's in place, A through Z, and we're ready to proceed to execute the contract for that project. And so moving that from before the bid is even read to the time to where the bid is awarded really doesn't change anything, except it saves hundreds of hours of time from the DOT employees and their consultants having to go through hundreds and thousands of pages of work and documentation to verify all of that's done before you even accept their bid. And so it seemed like a normal process. You know, we don't want to ever let a contract let to people that don't have the paperwork in order. But if we can save the time and the money on the front end and still have the barrier in place to prevent those contracts from being let to companies that don't qualify, then it seemed like the right thing to do to save the money. And it does save a tremendous amount of time and money.
Okay. I just want to say this because I got to get to some things that are on the floor because you got to go. So I think one of the questions that I heard earlier from our earlier guest is if you open the bids in May and the apparent low bidder does not have the form on E-Verify and his or her subcontractors do not have theirs listed as E-Verify, and you let the contract out in August and you say to them, hey, you notify them you're apparently the low bidder, and then that gives them 3 months. And my understanding is from the day you open the contract to the time you actually give them the contract, if they become E-Verify the day before that contract is let, that's all that's required. And there's 90 days to where anybody that was hired by that company in 90 days cannot go back and E-Verify. And I think that is one of the questions that came in the discussion with our earlier guest.
Yeah, I have no idea about the 90-day stuff. I can tell you this.
No, I'm not saying 90 days. I'm just saying you said it could be weeks or months before the contract is let.
Correct.
And that's all I'm saying is...
Well, here's another point, too, that we didn't even bring up. At the time the bids are turned in, the contractors don't even know who their subs are a lot of times. So a big project like a billion-dollar project down here on 400 and 285, they have no idea when they submit their bids exactly who those subcontractors are going to be. For example, who's going to stripe the pavement? Who's going to put the guardrail in? Who's going to put in the signage? Who's going to lay the fiber optic cable? Who's going to lay the conduit for all of that technology? I mean, there's hundreds of subcontractors to a project of that size. And so until the project gets awarded, you don't know who all those subs are. Now, once the general contractor submits his list of subcontractors, that's the best time to ask for those E-Verify documents. You don't necessarily want to do it on the front end because you don't know who might come in 3 or 4 weeks later and become the subcontractor for some of that work. And so I believe the closer you get to the time the project is awarded and the contract is executed, that's when you want to make sure all those documents are in place. And that's what the attorneys at GDOT do. They spend a lot of time scrubbing through those documents. Again, not just on E-Verify, but for performance bonds, for general liability insurance certificates, all of those things that would protect the taxpayer. And so I think it's okay. Now, if DA or others thinks that there's still a problem or a loophole, I'd be happy to sit down with the DOT and let him look at it. But I believe there's been correspondence back and forth between DA and the attorneys over at GDOT. I'm not sure we're ever going to completely satisfy DA, but I can tell you, if I thought that any contracts were being let to people that were hiring illegals, I would not stand here today and support it at all.
Senator, let me end it with this. Before a contract is let by the DOT, all requirements, including E-Verify, are met before that contract is signed, correct?
100%. Yes,
all
sir.
Right, all right. I want to move on. I'm going to leave that to the audience to sort out through the details.